Good morning. So this morning we are reading from Leviticus chapter 27, verse 1 to 34. And we're covering a new section, the section on intelligence. So the challenge with intelligence is that we have the assumption that we actually understand how things should be working. And that we have all the facts, and that we understand the context, and the context beyond the context. Because if you work with intelligence within a confined amount of information, you are going to come up with something that appears to be intelligent, but once you try and put it into practice, it fails. Because it doesn't take into consideration the things that are outside. Now, if you really want to be intelligent, you have to go to the manual and you need to read through the manual properly, understand it. And once you understand the manual properly and you understand how the makers of whatever that thing is, whether it's a vehicle or whatever the case is, you want to understand that so that when you do something, you do it with intelligence. With the understanding of the limitations, the capabilities, and all the other things that will exist. So, with those capabilities you need. So, for example, if you were to go and say, well, I'm going to be moving to another country. That other country has its own calendar, has its own days, doesn't work off the days of the week like we do, doesn't work off even necessarily the solar system that we are operating in. It has its own calendar. It has its own way of work. It has its own language. It has so many different things of its own. When you approach things from that humility, and the realization that you do not actually understand, that's when you place yourself in the position of being able to see things in a different perspective and see things in a way that allows you to leverage off the intelligence that exists in that place rather than the intelligence that you have in your own confined logical space. So yes, you need knowledge. You need knowledge of the place that you are going to be in, but you also need to have that curiosity to want to understand more of the part that you don't know. And not try and bring that world into your own paradigms and then try and interpret that world according to the way you currently think. You have to step out of your own space and step into that world, and only then can you actually have intelligence of that world. Now, let's assume for this conversation that the other world is actually like the universe. There's universal knowledge and intelligence, which is beyond and outstrips the knowledge and intelligence that we have here going on this planet, and even more narrowly what we've been told and shown in our education systems and all the rest of it, right? So let's assume, for the argument's sake, that we have a universal knowledge. Now, that means that we now need to understand the universal knowledge. We need to understand the universal experience, the universal rules, how do things really work. And for that, we have to go to the creator of that universe. We can't decide that we're going to just listen to one or two people one or two entities that come from different places to try and tell us how it works. No, we have to go to the creator of the universe. And when we go to the creator of the universe, that's when we get the information. Now, I know that's what's under debate at the moment, is that if there's a creator, then he's only the creator of this world. Well, that's not going to work, because everything is in complete harmony and balance in terms of its magnetics, etc., that's going on, the cycles of all the different things that are taking place. So that logic doesn't work, right? Now, what that also means is that when we go to this universal knowledge, the one that the creator has created, we need to know where the manual is. And the manual is God's word, because God is the creator. And when we go to God's word, we want to understand intelligence. It means we have to look at things the way God looks at them. Now, there are so many stories in the Bible that explain different aspects around God, what you should do, shouldn't do. You get examples of people's stories in their lives to see that when they did this way, two generations later, this happened in their family line as a consequence of them doing this. You see all of this across time. So the Bible gives you a timeless picture so that you can see the cause and effect across the whole message of 2,500 years worth of writing. Right. And by the way, that's 40 different authors. None of them knew each other, but guess what? Everything is balanced. And the hidden code within all of their writings matches. That's impossible. Not even AI could possibly even come up with that. Doesn't matter. You don't have the computing ability over millions of years to be able to create that. So this is from outside of time, which is why I can write the future into the book. And it can also make sure that it carries that message synchronously across all of the messages given by all the different authors, etc. And it has a code. It has a code of sevens that run through it that are absolutely crazy. And yeah, if you want to do some more research on that, you can check out with Chuck Missler. He did quite a bit of work on exposing how this code works. Right. So once we get this from the creator, we've now got it in written form, and we need to make sure that we don't add our own stuff. So obviously, you need to go and find a version that shows you what was there as well as what man added. And so the Old King James actually allows you to see the words that were added. They're in italics. And so you can read without the italics, and you can get the original version, right? Which is what I always do. You guys know that. Right. Then, once you read it, you have to come from a position of a blank slate. You have to get yourself and your own emotions and your own desires, thinking, and importances, and how you think is fairness, etc. You've got to get all of that out of the way, because otherwise you cannot look at it objectively. You can't add your own biases to it. You can't add your own desires and thinking. You've got to look at it at face value, exactly what it says. Afterwards, once you have now got the proper picture of the whole story, that's when you can turn around and you can look at it and say, okay, so now, how do I adjust my biases to what this is? And if you're struggling with some of those, then you've got to say, Lord, you know what? I've got a bias on this thing. This is how I think it should be. Help me to understand more. Give me more clarity, and so on and so forth. Right. So, Lord, where do you want me to start from? Okay, so Leviticus chapter 27 is talking about valuation. Valuation of lots of different aspects and different parts of creation, etc. And in valuation, there is somewhat of a comparison of one to the other. Now remember, God doesn't explain himself. He simply tells you. And because he tells you, that's what it is, right? And because he tells you and because that's what it is, you can't argue with him. You can't tell him, by the way, that's not how it should be. He's telling you as the creator, that's how it is. Now, what does that mean to your own personal life? We are all part of an ecosystem. Satan would have us believe that we are all independent and, you know what, we can do as we please. That's not true. And it's only when we realize who we are in the ecosystem, what it is that we need to focus on and how we need to focus on it. Valuation doesn't mean more or less important. All of them are important, but with different emphasis so that they can deliver certain things that are important for this entire ecosystem of reality to work. Right? And I say reality because there's a physical reality and a spiritual reality, right? We also get to deal with God's calendar and his way of managing an economy, which is not the same as what we have at the moment. Firstly, the economy of God is give, 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 right? When we talk about valuation, it is a valuation thing. It is not about trying to own and be in charge of and to overrule. God intentionally puts in breaks and hiccups to ensure that the economy can never overheat or be misused and abused by certain people and generations and all the rest of it. He intentionally builds that in. People have not listened to that. Of course, Satan doesn't want that to happen because Satan's economy runs off trade. And trade says, no, you're not allowed to give. You're not allowed to give. Whatever you give to somebody, they've got to give something back of equal value in return. You must never be in credit in heaven because you gave and nobody gave back to you. Your heavenly credit must be deleted. And the only way that can happen is if the other person gives back to you. Right. So, Satan doesn't want you to have any credit in heaven. And that's, of course, what the beast system will enforce. You will not be able to give freely. You can maybe give, but you will wind up getting back in one way, shape, or form by that same system, not by the Lord. Okay, so let's have a look at what God's system works like. All right. And I'm just going to read the whole thing through, and we'll stop as the Holy Spirit stops us, right? And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when a man shall make a singular vow, the persons for the Lord by the estimation, and thy estimation shall be of the male from 20 years old, even unto 60 years old, even thy estimation shall be 50 shekels of silver after the shekel of the sanctuary. And if a female, then thy estimation shall be 30 shekels. Now, why is the male and female different valuations? Well, it goes back to Adam and Eve, right? And if I was to take this 50-30, I would then say, okay, so the valuation in total of a married couple would be 80, right? Because it's a male and a female. Because you've got a 50 and a 30. But when you separate them out, you now have male 50, because we know that the female is a part of the male. Male 50, female 30, which gives you an indication that a large part of Adam was taken out to make Eve, right? Not just a little rib bone. And we know that's even wrong because it says that she is bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. So it was flesh and bone that was taken out, plus capabilities that he doesn't have, right? Right, so carrying on from verse 5. And from 5 years old, even unto 20 years old, then thy estimation shall be of the male 20 shekels, and for the female 10 shekels. So this is interesting. When it comes down to children, because remember, according to the Bible, once you turn 20, then you're of the age of accountability, right? So up until the age of accountability, from 5 years old to 20 years old, the male is 20 shekels and the female is 10 shekels, right? And if from a month old even unto 5 years old, then thy estimation shall be of the male 5 shekels of silver, and for the female thy estimation 3 shekels of silver. Notice, previously we had shekels according to the sanctuary. Now we're saying shekels of silver, right? But that is for up until 5 years old, right? From a month. So for the first month, there's no valuation. Verse 7. And if from 60 years old and above, if a male, then thy estimation shall be 15 shekels, and for the female, 10 shekels. And if he be poorer than thy estimation, then he shall present himself before the priest, and the priest shall value him according to his ability, that vowed shall the priest value him. Right. So maybe he's missing an arm, or something else has gone wrong in his life. You know, something's not working. His valuation wouldn't be according to a normal, working, healthy person, right? And so as a consequence, the valuation then gets determined based on the priest's value, right? It's interesting. I was having a conversation with somebody the other day, and they were talking about his mom is losing her eyesight, and she's having to really rely on other people and all the rest of it. And he says, it's so terrible. I said, oh, so she's been upgraded then. And he looks at me really strange, and he says, what do you mean? I said, do you know how hard this person's spirit, the real person within that earth suit, has to work when the earth suit starts to fail? You see, your spirit has been made perfect, but your earth suit is not. And so your spirit has to work so much harder and integrate more and rely and gain humility, lose pride, and all these different things as a consequence of the earth suit breaking down. But when the earth suit breaks down, your spirit gets upgraded to compensate, right? But of course, this is before Jesus died, so the valuation is all on a physical basis, right? Verse 9. And if a beast, whereof men bring an offering unto the Lord, all that shall be holy. He shall not alter it, nor change it, a good for a bad, or a bad for a good. And if he shall at all change beast for beast, then it and the exchange thereof shall be holy. Right. So whatever you give to God becomes holy. And now you want to change it back, whether you want to rather give a bad for a good, or you want to give a good for a bad because you feel bad because you didn't give a good one, and now you're feeling convicted about it, so you want to rather give a good one. Well, the minute it becomes something holy, now we're starting to enter into the way this universe has been created by God. The moment something becomes holy by the words of a person, that thing is holy. You can't now go and try and change it. It's holy. It belongs to God. Right? And if you try and change it, then the thing that you're trying to exchange also becomes holy. And if any unclean beast, of which they do not offer a sacrifice unto the Lord, then he shall present the beast before the priest, and the priest shall value it, whether it be good or bad. As thou valuest it, the priest shall it be. But if he will at all redeem it, then he shall add a fifth thereof unto thy estimation. Right, so what does that mean? God has created this planet in such a way that it would create very healthy food for humans to consume. In order to sustain the environment and the ecosystem to produce such good quality food, there are other creatures that are necessary to be in place to do their stuff. You are not supposed to eat the ecosystem. You're supposed to eat the product of the ecosystem. And the ecosystem is very clearly explained in the Bible as to what it is you can eat and what it is you cannot eat. And if it says unclean, it's not talking about it's just bad and unclean to everything. No, other predators will eat it. But it's unclean to a human being because the human being is not supposed to be eating the ecosystem. It's like so logical. What is wrong with people? You know, the picture I have in my mind is that you dish up some food on a plate for a guy to come and eat. And he starts by eating the plate. He's not even eating the food properly. He's eating the plate. He's eating the knife and the fork. He's breaking his teeth on it. And what do? You shake your head, and that's about all you can do because this is just – there aren't words to try and describe how – I don't want to even use words. But, I mean, for yourself, you can figure it out. Really? People just do it the way God created it to be done. It's simple. It's so simple. Anyway, Satan's got a lot of people tied around his finger and they don't want to be controlled, but they are being so controlled by him. Yeah, so controlled by him. Anyway, get back to these creatures. So the clean ones have a higher valuation. In that, they are always holy. But the unclean ones, you can't sacrifice them. You can't bring that as a sacrifice to God. And by the way, it's really interesting about the sacrifice, right? Everything that gets brought for sacrifice actually winds up being food for the people who are sacrificing it. So if I bring a lamb, then I will walk away, or the priest will have, the food, the actual meat. Right, but there's certain parts of that creature, the lamb, that are really not healthy for you. And God is saying, I want that as a sacrifice. If I have it as a sacrifice, you won't eat it, you will stay healthy. So there's certain fat, kidneys and things like that, the call over the liver. These things, they get burnt to cinders. They don't exist anymore. There's certain sacrifices you give where the entire animal is completely burnt to nothing, right? But most of the time, the sacrifices, especially the ones done in the feasts, right? They then it becomes a, like the Feast of Weeks, for example. I wouldn't like to call it a barbecue, but if you're going to have a barbecue with lamb or lamb on the spit, you're going to remove all that fat and you're going to burn it over there. It'll smell nice, but you're not going to eat it. That's your sacrifice. God is intending you to sacrifice so that you will stay healthy. God doesn't need anything from us. But you acknowledge him by obeying his word. But these creatures that are not clean, if you then value it, and by the way, you're not giving this to the priest, you're valuing it as whatever, you're saying this is now yours, and you get a valuation for it, and in that valuation you can now give it to them and they can transact with you in the sense that they would be able to say this is the value for it. And now you've given it, notice you're giving it to them, but he's saying this is the value for it. Now why do you need to have a value for something that you're giving? Because if you now want to take it back, you've now given it, you now want to take it back, you have to pay 1/5 extra for that value. You can't just pay the same amount. No. You've given it. To take it back, you've got to pay another fifth of that price extra to be able to get it back. By the way, that's only for things that wouldn't be holy, right? Remember, we're talking about how God's economy and God's system works. And when a man shall sanctify his house holy unto the Lord, then the priest shall estimate it, whether it be good or bad. As the priest shall estimate it, so shall it stand. And if he that sanctified it will redeem his house, then he shall add the fifth of the money of thy estimation unto it, and it shall be his. Again, the house itself can't be something that's holy, but he's saying, please, I would like my house to be holy. Right? So, gives it to the Lord. Now he wants to take it back because he wants to sell it or whatever the case is. He's got to pay the full price plus one-fifth to get it back. Makes people think carefully about when they commit things to the Lord, right? But also, it's then the Lord's, and the Lord takes care of that which is his, right? And if a man shall sanctify unto the Lord of a field of his possession, then thy estimation shall be according to the seed thereof, a homer of barley seed, at 50 shekels of silver. So if it's a barley field, a homer, that's a certain size, right? That's the valuation of it, right? If he sanctify his field, remember, sanctify means to give it to the Lord for the Lord's purpose, right? If he sanctify his field from the year of Jubilee, according to thy estimation, it shall stand. But if he sanctify his field after the Jubilee, then the priest shall reckon unto him the money according to the years that remain even unto the year of Jubilee. And it shall be abated from thy estimation. So what does that mean? You see, God intentionally puts these hiccups, these resets, these restarts into the economy, where he ensures that nobody can start to become these rich overlords that overrule and override everybody and form slavery and all these things, right? The way he does it is that every 50 years, everything is taken away from everybody who's got everything and given back to the families and the people who originally had them. Everything's taken back every 50 years. Well, that becomes a bit of a problem when you're valuing something, right? Because if you've only got 3 years left before the Jubilee, and I'm now going to lose this field which I've got, right? And I had valued it. Now, the problem is, I can't pay the full 50 years worth of barley because I'm not going to be reaping 50 years worth of barley. I'm only going to be reaping 3 years. Therefore, I will pay for those 3 years. So you see, God's economy is specifically built in with there's no overheating. There's no inflation. There's no any of these problems we've got with our financial system. All of this would go away if we just do it the way God says. Right? And in God's economy, in God's way, that's how it works. And of course, there wouldn't be a financial system at all because this is giving. Yeah, a lot of jobs will not exist in heaven. A lot, because there's no transacting. And so many jobs in this world are based on transaction. You see, if I'm giving, I don't need a lawyer to tell me that I should have got something back. There's none of this other stuff that needs to take place. I don't need accountants because nobody is keeping score. Right? Nobody is keeping score to see, did you get this back because you had to pay that? And have you paid into the right account? And none of these things exist. Right? So many of the jobs that we've got in the creation of Satan's kingdoms don't exist, and there's so much peace and freedom when you don't have to worry about tax. Because there's no tax in heaven either. Well, anyway, we're not there yet. And if he that sanctify the field will in any wise redeem it, then he shall add the fifth of the money of thy estimation unto it, and it shall be assured to him. And if he will not redeem the field, or if he have sold the field to another man, it shall not be redeemed any more. So he can't get that back that way. But the field, when it goeth out in the jubilee, shall be holy unto the Lord as a field devoted. The possession thereof shall be the priest's. So I've taken it, I've now sold it to somebody else, and I've sold it, by the way, at the valuation, because I know what the value is. I've sold it at the valuation to somebody else for the number of harvests he's going to get before the jubilee, because he's going to lose his field in the jubilee. That field's gone. His family is going to have to lift up and move back to where they originally had land, right? But for as long as he's got that field, he's got that field until the jubilee. But because it was originally sanctified in the jubilee, it can't go back to the original owner. It now goes to the priests, because that's who gets all the sanctified stuff, right? And if sanctify unto the Lord a field which he hath bought, which not of the fields of his possession, because remember, he's going to get his possession back. So he's bought something that's not. Then the priest shall reckon unto him the worth of thy estimation unto the year of the jubilee, and he shall give thine estimation in that day a holy thing unto the Lord. In the year of the jubilee, the field shall return unto him of whom it was bought, to him to whom the possession of the land, and all thy estimation shall be according to the shekel of the sanctuary. 20 gerahs shall be the shekel. Only the firstling of beasts, which should be the Lord's firstling, no man shall sanctify it. Whether ox or sheep, it the Lord's. And if of an unclean beast, then he shall redeem according to thine estimation, and shall add a fifth thereunto. Or if it be not redeemed, then it shall be sold according to thy estimation. So for the unclean creatures, you can sell them. But again, if it's been sanctified, you've got to pay the extra fifth, right? Notwithstanding, no devoted thing that a man shall devote unto the Lord of all that he hath, of man and beast, and of the field of his possession, shall be sold or redeemed. Every devoted thing is most holy unto the Lord. None devoted, which shall be devoted of men, shall be redeemed, shall surely be put to death. What does that mean? So I've now devoted something to the Lord, right? An animal. And I now want to redeem that animal. Because it was the firstborn, I can't redeem it. It has to be put to death. Now that sounds terrible, right? But why is this? Why is this? Well, there is in another place a statement that every firstborn human, right, male or female, must be redeemed. So you don't put to death humans, right? But it must be redeemed because they belong to the Lord. Every firstborn in the entire earth belongs to the Lord, because that's what happened with Pharaoh. That's what happened, right? When the firstborn was killed in Egypt, the firstborn of those that were under the blood, those belong to the Lord. And it's the same now. It's the same now. Every firstborn. Now, how do you redeem? Well, there's a lovely ceremony, which is, nowadays you'd have a lamb on the spit, you'd have a great ceremony, and you would say that you are redeeming your child. I think it's at the age of 13. You're redeeming your child, your firstborn. Now, I have noticed something interesting. The firstborn goes through some terrible stuff. Really does. But I wonder in my mind whether or not the firstborn would go through a whole lot less if they had been redeemed at the early time. And I think that if your child, your firstborn, is not yet redeemed, I think it's a good time to do that, whether they're 60 years old or not. Have a redemption party. Right? Now, that's the firstborn of humans. You know, it's interesting how the DNA gets developed for the firstborn child, or, you know, the firstborn animal, and any firstborn creature. It's the first time that that womb is being used to create an entity that is going to be entering the physical realm. And God actually uses an interesting set of words there. He says, the firstborn, the one that opens the matrix. Is that Matrix movie? Right? There's a movie called The Matrix. And what the movie is trying to depict is that there are two different worlds. Right? Well, God is saying there's a spiritual realm and there's a physical realm. And giving birth is to create a entity in the physical realm. But where does that spirit come from? Right? So what God says is that that firstborn of the animals, that needs to be given to the Lord or put to death. It can't live without belonging to the Lord. So you need to redeem it. If you don't, it needs to be put to death, right? And we can argue that's value and all the rest. But now you're talking about this world system. God has got things going on spiritually that we don't begin to comprehend. And it's really important for us to understand that if he's saying that this is how it has to happen, this is how it has to happen. So you either redeem it, right, from the Lord, or it's got to go back to the Lord via death, right? Not so with human beings. Human beings, you have to redeem your firstborn. And all the tithe of the land, of the seed of the land, of the fruit of the tree, the Lord's. Notice that. The tenth of the land, of the seed of the land, of the fruit of the tree, is the Lord's. Holy unto the Lord. And if a man will at all redeem of his tithes, he shall add thereto the fifth thereof. So initially, you were going to give one tenth of the particular seed that you happen to give in. Now you want to redeem that one tenth of grain because you realize that you really didn't have the right heart in that. So now you come and you say, can you please give me that back because I want to give you the better seed? Well, you're going to have to pay the full price of that seed, which you gave, plus an additional fifth. Right? You're going to add an extra fifth. Then you can buy it back. By buying it back, by the way, you're giving more than the tenth. And concerning the tithe of the herd, or of the flock, or whatsoever passeth under the rod, the tenth shall be holy unto the Lord. Now this is interesting because God orchestrates your possessions. Whatever you're giving, if it's like animals, whatever the case is, you've got to count the tenth, right? Now what does that mean? Well, when I have all my animals line up, I'm not allowed to try and put them into certain order. I'm going to get them all to line up, and then we're going to count them. And every tenth one becomes the Lord's. Gets a badge on it, or however we tie something to it to indicate this is the Lord's. Once it gets through this whole line, all those ones that have got something tied to that, those belong to the Lord, and those go off, whether it's a good one or a bad one. In this way, God removes the DNA that should not be part of your procreation system in your creatures that you are taking care of, right? He removes that. The same thing with the seed. You count off all these different seed and then you process them. The tenth one, he's doing the orchestration from within, from the DNA level, from all of that low level details that you can't even begin to understand, because he understands what seed is going to grow into what, and then how many of those seeds are going to grow and how many of those seeds. He knows what's going to happen to your land if you deviate from what he's saying here. Right? And if a man will at all redeem of his tithes, he shall add thereto the fifth thereof. And concerning the tithe of the herd or the flock, of whatsoever passeth under the rod, the tenth shall be holy unto the Lord. He shall not search whether it be good or bad, neither shall he change it. And if he change it at all, then both it and the change thereof shall be holy. It shall not be redeemed. These are the commandments which the Lord commanded Moses for the children of Israel in Mount Sinai. So it's probably something you want to listen to a few times to try and maybe take a pen and paper and draw it all out to get an insight into this, right? But there's one fundamental message to this intelligence. When you're looking at things from a physical perspective, you can only see so much. Even if you put it under electron microscopes, you are going to get down to, and even if you take it to CERN, you're going to get down to particle level. What you're not going to get down to is the actual spiritual thing that's going on in the background. And that is something that's going to continue. It's going to continue thereafter. Spirits don't die. Spiritual things don't die. They just move, right? I was speaking with somebody, and they went to their family member's house and said, oh, it smells just like their deceased grandfather's house. Well, yeah, of course. Smell is a big thing with spirits, right? You can pick up a lot going on because of smell. Spirits don't die. The spiritual aspect of things happening are so minute and so much lower than even the DNA. And God works at that level. If you want real intelligence, you need to work at that level. Because everything we can see and all the rest of it is all consequences of that level. We're living in a symptom of the cause. True intelligence is to say, you know what? I'm not going to try and move around all these symptoms. I'm going to go for the root cause. And I'm going to work together with the one who has created it and knows how every tiny, tiny, tiny part works together. And I'm going to ask that creator. I'm going to ask God, please, can you work on the inside while I work on the outside? And his answer will always be the same. I've told you how I work on the inside. I've told you how to work on the outside. If you do it my way, you know it's going to work the way I'm working with you, and it will work properly. You know, the herds that Jacob took care of, and you can apply this to anything, your studies, your work, your, doesn't matter what it is. The herds that Jacob took care of, because he honored the Lord in all the different things that the Lord had told, you know that his flocks just multiplied and multiplied, and they were healthy and strong and good. You can go and read up how he did that. But how was he really doing it? He knew what God had said, and he did it the way God said. So The first message about intelligence is real intelligence is when you stop trying to be intelligence in the physical realm. And you just go back to the one who created intelligence. And he's already written down what you're supposed to do. And you just do it. Well, guys, not sure what Holy Spirit's speaking to you about. But if you're following along with us in the handbook, then make your keywords in the second column and score yourself in the right. God bless and have an absolutely beautiful day.